all know, me and a calendar, like, I wouldn't say it's an abusive relationship, but just I don't spend a lot of time like dealing with it. So I usually figure out what the date is when I go to send my slides off to the guys in the back, and I typed in 4/28 this morning, and the first thing that said in my mind was, oh, it's Family Sunday. And I just shipped it off. Because there may be one or two more topics in Scripture I could have picked that may not fit this morning. There's not many. That being said, so I've got to do something with the language here real quick, okay? We're going to use the word wickedness. We're going to use the word evil. The kids here, do you understand something that is wrong? Raise your hand if you understand when something is wrong. Okay, wow. The participation's not what I was expecting. Do you like it when someone lies to you? No. No. We don't like that. Do you like it when someone is mean to you? No. So we could go with evil or wicked or wrong or mean. Okay? We could go with a lot of different words. Proverbs kind of lumps them all under a couple different words, either wickedness or evil. And that's what we're going to talk about this morning. Now, I wish with my whole heart that the ears that are here this morning shouldn't hear what I'm getting ready to say. I wish with my whole heart that under a certain age they were just immune to all of this stuff. They were just so far outside of it that there was protection, there was hope. We were shielding them, we were taking care of them. But listen, that's not the case. And so, though the verbiage in Proverbs may be a little out of date for some of the ones that are younger, I'm begging you parents and grandparents, be able to translate what we're going to talk about this morning to their level. One of the things you can do is ask them about things that are done to them, and then here's the question. How many people like being lied to? Is it wrong to lie to me? Raise your hand, all of you. Is it wrong to lie to me? All right. Is it wrong when I lie? Is it wrong to be mean to me? Yeah. Is it wrong for someone to be mean to you? Absolutely. Is it wrong when I'm mean? Yeah. Yeah. So sometimes with the little ones, what you and I have to do is we have to meet them where they're at first. Now, as we rotate into what we're getting ready to get into, I'm going to pitch to you adults this. I think sometimes we need to be using some more biblical language with some things. Okay? Now, I'll give you a short personal testimony as to why I think that way. The internet's full of free stuff, right? You just kind of type in things and you can search and things come up. And so it took me to the age of like 40 to figure out how to put a picture on a slide in PowerPoint. It is what it is. So there's sites that you can go and you can search for free images. Okay? Pixabay is one of them. So I was on there, and I was getting ready to build the slides for this morning, not knowing that it was Family Sunday yet, because I haven't put the date in. I searched for evil. I wanted a slide. It was like, go. Scroll, nope. Nope, nope. Oh, this is evil. Nope, I back out. Right? Okay. Wicked. Boop. Scroll down. Nope. Nope. Don't like that. Wicked. You could feel it in your soul is what I'm telling you. Sometimes you and I, we're toning down the language for people, and I think we need to rev it back up. What I mean by that is not mean, or that is not wrong, or that's not a mess up, slip up, a faux pas. We can come up with a bunch of other words that we use. That is evil. That is evil. That is wrong, demonic. You understand what I'm saying? I think we need to ramp up some of our verbiage in modern culture because we're losing some of it. Because when I searched those words, the imagery that come up was evil, dark, wicked. Okay? And you just know, like Christian people, you just know it. You walk into a movie, all right, you bought the ticket for it, and you walk into it, you sit down, or you plug it up, or you fire it up on Netflix or whatever, and if the title wasn't enough or the poster wasn't enough, you get in the middle of that, and your thought is, this is evil. I got to go. Got to move. Proverbs speaks to that kind of stuff. I want to speak to you about it this morning, and then I want you and I to be helpful to these kids as they navigate. If they wake up tomorrow morning on a Monday and they walk into a school system there, they walk back into college, they walk into their job, you know what they're going to see? They flip open their phone, their tablet. You know what they're going to see? Evil, wicked things. We have got to get more helpful in giving them the discernment. And God's word helps us to that. Proverbs and the wicked. I want to be able to see it. I want to discern it. And then what do I want to do with this information? There are two other options. Being neutral, somebody say, is not one of them. Being neutral is not one of them. There are two other options you and I get. Move away. Get away from it. Retreat. The other one is dig your heels in and push back. Now, the circumstance is going to dictate which one it is. How you are in your spirit is going to dictate sometimes which one that is. Sometimes, listen, when you and I are weak, when we're hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, that's the whole idea around that acronym. Stepping forward is probably not our best plan. So when we're navigating through things that are evil, when we step into wickedness, when we're dealing with something right then, sometimes it's better to turn and go regroup. My heart is not ready for this. Maybe it's a conversation with a loved one, right? Maybe it's helping your kids discern the future. Maybe something's going on there. Maybe it's a friend of your children, and you just think, we are not ready to deal with this. We need to separate. And then other times, friends, and this is what puts us at odds with the culture that we're in. At other times, you and I need to, right here and no further. It will go no further than me. And it doesn't matter who is trying to bring it in. Government, spouse, kid, friend, brother, sister, does not matter. It will go this far and no further. It will not touch my home. It will not touch the heart of my children. And God help me, it will not touch my community or my church. Take that wickedness somewhere else. Our children need to be able to see it and at least discern it, and to be open with you about what they just saw or what they just heard. Proverbs chapter 2, when you get into it, it finishes. We read the first part of it last week. We're going to read a little bit more of it this week. For the Lord gives wisdom, from his mouth come knowledge and understanding. He stores up sound wisdom for the upright. He is a shield to those who walk in integrity, guarding the paths of justice and watching over the way of his saints. Then you will understand righteousness and justice and equity and every good thing. For wisdom will come into your heart, and knowledge will be pleasant to your soul. Discretion will watch over you. Understanding will guard you, delivering you from the way of evil, from men of perverted speech, who forsake the paths of uprightness to walk in the ways of darkness, who rejoice in doing evil and delight in the perverseness of evil, men whose paths are crooked and who are devious in their ways. What does Proverbs and wisdom do? It helps me not attach to those people. Why is that important? Because when I attach to certain people, I share their curse. Do not be unequally yoked. Command of Scripture. It's not a suggestion. What's it mean to be yoked? It means to be attached in the work and the walk of life. I am going in a direction working with the Lord. I cannot be yoked to someone that is not. And if I make that choice, I have set myself up for tremendous chaos. Now, what is that yoking? Marriage? Pretty good one. Right? If you're choosing that, now some of you were in a situation and things changed. You got saved, they got saved. That's just on the Lord. The Bible deals with that. But you walking into it, 18, 19, 20, 21, looking for a spouse, and you're like, man, that person's cute. Now we're engaged and now we're married, and like you wake up one day and you're like, holy moly, they're going a totally different direction. They don't care about the Lord, they don't care about morality, they don't care about, I'm married based off of things that were not spiritual in nature. What's another kind of yoking? A business partner. going to go into business. You're going to yoke your life, your money, your finances, your future to someone that doesn't know, love, and honor the Lord, and not just in Christian in name only. I'm talking about a disciple. I love God. I love His Word. You want to yoke up with somebody that doesn't believe like you? Get money involved and watch how fast you two split. Here's another one. Some of you young ones, best friends. Oh, but I love so-and-so. They're so nice to me. They're so this, they're so that. If you start, you and I start yoking our lives to other people that don't love and honor King Jesus, there will eventually come a moment that you're going to have to give in, or that relationship is going to explode. Because you're not going in the same direction. If you love God and you honor Him and you trust His Word and you're leaning into it and you're leaning into its authority, it's going to put you at odds with people that don't. You can't be yoked to them in some serious fashion that you have chosen. Now, my boss is not a believer. Okay? Go do your job. And then when they tell you to do something that's not biblical, you can say no. And then we'll let the chips fall where they may. You're not yoking to that person. You needed a job and you took one. Do you understand the difference between the two? One is a choice. Now, sometimes your bosses are so horrible that you have to go somewhere else and find another job, and that's fine too. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But when you're making your choices, who I'm going to marry, who I'm going to do business with, who I'm going to do life with, what number am I going to pick up, and what phone call am I going to make when my life falls apart, that person needs to love and honor Jesus Christ. If not, you are unequally yoked. Now, I don't care how nice they are and how well they've treated you or what they've done for you. That person and you are not equally yoked. So let's look at what the Lord calls evil. Flip over to chapter 6 with me. Chapter 6, I have loved for years in the context of being a pastor, in the context of looking at the church, because to me it pulls out one thing that we have let slide for years. Proverbs chapter 6, verse 12 says this: a worthless person, a wicked man, goes about with crooked speech, winks his eyes and signals with his feet, and points with his fingers, with perverted heart devises evil, continually sowing discord. Therefore calamity will come upon him suddenly. In a moment he will be broken beyond healing. If I am yoked up to a person like that, what happens when their breaking comes? Mine comes. I am left dealing with that. So let's look at the next couple of verses. Well, what does the Lord actually call evil? There are six things the Lord hates, seven that are an abomination to Him. You think saying God hates something is pretty stout language? God hates that. God hates this. That language is legit. Now, here's my question to you. Do you think you and I ought to hate it too? Now, friends, it's easy to hate when it's over there. It's a lot harder to hate when it's right here. Read with me. Haughty eyes, proud eyes, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood. A heart that devises wicked plans, and feet that make haste to run to evil. A false witness who breathes out lies, and one who sows discord among brothers. When you read through that list of stuff, by the time you get to the end of it, you have destroyed the community. Any community involved is now gone. You can't have a marriage with a lying tongue or a devious spouse. You can't be friends with people like this. You can't run with people that are devising wicked plans. You will never be close to them. Listen, and just because right now they're not doing those, devising those plans against you, listen, kids, listen to me. Elementary school, middle school, high school, I've talked to people that work there. This stuff goes on there too. You're running with a little crowd of people, and they're constantly thinking up ways to torture somebody. Should you be there? And if you are there, you know what you should be doing? Pushing back. But they won't like me then. That's one of the burdens you got to bear. And it's going to be that way the rest of your life. Evil people don't like Jesus things. And Jesus things are standing up for those that are mistreated, hurt, and harmed. Wickedness devises evil against the innocent, the lowly, the ones that are easy to hurt. And some of us run in packs of people that do that on repeat, and we just let it go. You got a work bully? You got a work bully? If you got one, what side of that equation are you on? They cool with you? You got a work bully that's cool with you? Or you got a work bully that despises you too? I hope it's the latter. Why? Because when they're devising their evil, wicked plans and you hear, that ain't right. That's wrong. I'm not going to do that. We are at odds with these things. It grieves our soul when we don't. When you and I stand and when we yield and you leave those moments, some of my biggest failure, some of the things that I carry even to this day and the enemy reminds me of constantly are not moments that I've done things that were wrong. It's moments that I didn't do things that were right. Proverbs chapter 6 is filled with these things. God hates proud eyes and a lying tongue. Now, what's the difference between a lying tongue in verse 17 and a false witness in verse 19? Verse 19 speaks to the corruption of justice. God hates the corruption of justice. Someone that is a false witness is somebody testifying against someone else. They did that to Jesus. They did that to Stephen. They corrupted justice by testifying in a way that was malicious. God hates that. Pretty stout language, isn't it? God hates a heart that devises wicked plans. God hates the feet that make haste, that run to evil. What does make haste mean? They're going to do it quickly. Can't even wait. Cannot wait to do this wicked, vile, evil thing. God hates that. But he pulls out number 7 and makes it just a little extra. And I don't know what the difference is between God hating something, because that sounds pretty bad, and something being an abomination to him. But he or she who sows discord among brethren, God calls that an abomination. And friends, within the church, there is not anything more wicked than that, and there's not anything more prevalent than that. Too many modern churches have sat around and let their community be destroyed from the inside out because nobody wanted to look at somebody and say, we're not having that conversation. You got an issue, go there. You want me to go with you? I'll go with you. Too many churches have sat around and let the trust of the church fall apart. The foundation of the church fall apart. The music may be good and the offering may be good and everybody comes in dressed up and looking nice and feeling good and shaking hands, and all the while there's discord everywhere. This person hates that person. This person's doing this thing. This person is speaking this. This person has this prayer request. And we're not going to do anything about it because we don't want to harm the numbers. And we definitely don't want to offend anybody that's actually a pillar of our church when they're doing something they shouldn't be doing. And that goes for me, and that goes for everybody else. The Lord calls it an abomination. It's wickedness, and he hates it. So now we're diagnosing what the Lord calls wickedness. The things that he would point out. So we know lying is wrong and devising wicked plans are wrong. And some of you kids are old enough to understand what both those things mean. So when you see them, it's time to act. At a bare minimum, I will not be a part of that. That is wrong. You shouldn't do that. That's the bare minimum of where we need to be when these things come up. And my young friends, listen to me. Some of your schools are very unsafe places because a lot of the Christian kids there don't act Christian. Or a lot of the ones that claim Christ don't stand up and actually feel the courage to have someone look at them and say, you're not part of the in crowd anymore. They are a part of the problem by not doing anything. Does that make sense? The abuse that goes on and the things that happen in these school systems, man, some of that could be stopped by some, especially some of you boys. If you would stand up in the armor of God as a young man, as a young woman, and say, that is evil, it is wrong, we will not do that, I will not do that, things would get a lot better. And some of those kids that come in so downtrodden and beat up, some of them would see that and be drawn to Christ, be drawn to the church, because for the first time in their whole life, somebody took up for them, somebody advocated for them, and in that moment, you would look like Jesus. That's what he does for us. How about Proverbs chapter 8? Verse 13 says this, "The fear of the Lord is hatred of evil. Pride and arrogance are the way of evil, and perverted speech I hate." Now listen, we got a lot of kids in here that play some sports. And when you look out there on that TV and there's professional athletes, or you're listening to those interviews, or you're YouTubing things that are going on, when you hear pride and you hear arrogance, and we constantly have to deal with this, we constantly have to diagnose, what's the difference between confidence and arrogance, or confidence and pride? Listen, if you have to get that close to it and you don't know what it is yet, you're in the wrong spot. We are edifying people for their pride and their arrogance. We're idolizing them so young, watching them operate. You want to know how I know that? Go to a little league basketball game. Watch the celebrations. 5-year-olds mocking. Too small. Right? You want to know why they get to do stupid stuff like that? Because on the NBA court, when somebody did that, somebody come up and just didn't knock their teeth out. Now, I'm not a violence person. But disrespect is so dangerous that by the time it gets to a certain level, that's all that's left. That's all that's left. And we're feeding that into the culture. Be prideful, celebrate, do this thing, do that thing. Make them feel bad, make them feel horrible. Like, we're eating it up. We love that stuff. They sell jerseys, right? They get all the coverage. And God would say, I hate pride. Play hard. Be ferocious. Be the best. Outwork everybody. Don't be prideful. Don't be arrogant. You know the difference. So do I. Do your job. Walk away. Help somebody up off the ground. Give them a high five when they do something good. Even if they're on the other team, absolutely. Nice shot. You know what happens when you and I do stuff like that? It disarms all the craziness. It disarms all the craziness. Somebody puts a shot up, man, right in your eye, like them high schoolers do us when we're playing them at St. Albans. Fire department rolls into the AASH in St. Albans. And man, when we get there about 2:30, 3 o'clock, and them high school kids come rolling in, their eyeballs get this big, like, man, we got somebody to play today. And what I found is absolutely wild is they do not know how to respond when you look at somebody and say, man, good shot. Oh, that was a nice one. Good pass. It's like, wait a second, that we just scored on you. And you're looking at me telling me good job. We finished the game and you high-fived me, shook my hand, said my name. They don't understand any of this. You diffuse all of that craziness when you step in and look like Jesus. We're idolizing things that God says I hate. You should be the hardest worker out there and the most humble. And it should be that way the rest of your life, no matter what you touch, no matter what you do, the job you end up in, how far you go in sports, all of those things do not matter. Be the hardest worker and honor God with your effort, but then be the most humble, honor Him with your attitude. And man, you will defuse so many situations. You will be a peacemaker like your Lord. Proverbs 10:2, treasures gained by wickedness do not profit, but righteousness delivers from death. Our culture is a picture of that on repeat. These people are loaded with money, and they are no happier than the poorest person here today. Actually, they're more miserable. You want to know why? Because they figured out the world can't supply to them what it was promised. Proverbs 10:12, hatred stirs up strife, but love covers all offenses. Man, there's a next level not to just saying bad things. You know what the next level of love is? Covering people's mistakes. Stepping in and helping when it's time. Not fanning the flame, but covering it up and saying, listen, this is not going any further than this. Or, hey, that was my fault, not theirs. That was something that went on and you stepped in and you helped grab a hold of that and harness it instead of blow it into a raging inferno. There's another level besides not just saying wicked things. The other level is you and I, when gossip comes to us, it stops. When discord comes to us, it stops. Negativity comes to us, it stops. You look like Jesus. How about Proverbs 10:20? The tongue of the righteous is choice silver, but the heart of the wicked is of little worth. Friends, I was thinking about this week. You know, the life of wickedness is a life of emptying. The life of wickedness, the life of evil is constant emptying. There's no joy. There's no peace. It gets poured out. Even when the world is pouring stuff in, the hole in the bottom is too big and it just floods out. No friends, no love, no hope, no peace. When God is warning us to run from evil and to run from wickedness, He's also warning us to run from that kind of life. All evil and all wickedness is a life of loss. You lose friendships, you lose credibility, you lose your integrity, you lose your stuff. Ultimately, you lose your life, you lose your soul. It's a life of loss. And these warnings aren't about robbing us from something, it's about keeping us from that life. God says, I'm going to give you a life of blessing. What I give you will actually bear fruit and be good, whether it be love or community, a spouse, money, power, all of those things. God says, I will give them and there will be no side effects. Like the medicine commercials on TV, and like, this medicine's going to help your rash. And then for the last 18 seconds of the 30-second commercial, when everybody's kind of dancing around on the TV, high-fiving and having fun, the side effects come in. Possible this, possible that. And this is one of those moments when I wish the kids weren't in here. Because some of them are pretty good. Right? Like no matter what your age is, you're going to need a diaper if you take this medicine and you get this side effect. Do you remember 20 years ago they had a product, you could buy it at CVS, and on the product, when you flipped it over, it said, wear brown pants. Still out there. I believe it's in a blue bottle. You can flip it over for yourself. Until you know what this product's going to do, wear brown pants or have a change. Don't sneeze. The life of the wicked is a depleting life of loss. And God diagnoses these things, and He looks at you and I, and He says, run from them. Not because He hates us, but because He loves us. No ill befalls the righteous. That's Proverbs 12. But the wicked are what? Filled with trouble. Proverbs 15:29, the Lord is far from the wicked, but He hears the prayer of the righteous. Man, one of the worst things about a life of loss and a life of wickedness is that God is far from you. If He is all love, and He is all joy, and He is all peace, and He is not close to me, what does that mean about my love and my joy and my peace? They're gone. They're gone. One of the things about the Christian religion and the Christian life is this. We're not seeking things. We're seeking a person. And with that person comes all the wonderful things. All the things you and I are seeking for come with Him. That's one of the glories of the Christian life that you and I get to live. I'm not looking for love and joy and peace. I'm seeking Him. And He is all of those things. He is the resource, the fountain, the repeat. There is no limitation to what is going on there. But to the wicked, God help them. The Lord is far from them. But Proverbs 19:19, a man of great wrath will pay the penalty, for if you deliver him, you will only have to do it again. Friends, young ones, if your temper is out of control, you better get it under control. When your temper is raging, adults, don't pass this down to your kids. Learn to control your anger. There are moments when it should be released. The Bible says, without sin, be angry and do not sin. There are moments when anger is a proper response. But most of the time, you and I aren't dealing in that realm. We're passing down this thing, this inheritance to our children, and then it blows our mind when they partake in it. A man of great wrath, when your anger, your temper is heated, when you are out of control, the Bible says, don't even try to deliver them from that because they're just going to do it again. That's scary to think, isn't it? Proverbs 19:24 says, don't worry when evildoers go unpunished and be jealous when the wicked seem to prosper. Evil people will have no future. Friends, sometimes you and I are sitting in the middle of something and evil people look like they're winning. You and I need to be reminded of the truths of Scripture. That life is going to end. That wickedness is going to end. That evil is going to be paid for. And it's either going to be paid for when that person comes to faith in Jesus Christ and the wrath of God will have been poured out on the cross just like it was for my evil. It will be so for theirs. Or, this is hard to say out loud, hell is a real place. The punishment of God is real. The wickedness you and I have poured out will be paid for. It will be paid for by Jesus on the cross so that you and I can live as he did or live like we should have lived. Or it will be paid for when we meet the God of the universe. And the punishment for the wickedness that's been poured out on you will be far more than that person ever wanted to be a part of. And sometimes we have to rest in that. Lord, you're going to sort this out. They're not going to get away with this. You are going to help me. Fret not yourself because of evildoers, and be not envious of the wicked, for the evil man has no future, and the lamp of the wicked will be what? Put out. Now, friends, I finished this morning with the same place I finished a couple of these proverbs before, which is, this is a job to be passed down from the parents. Where does Solomon get this wisdom? It's not just from God. One of God's greatest blessings on Solomon's life was he was the son of... Man, good job. Ace the quiz. Nailed it. He was the son of David. And you know who David is known as? The man after God's own heart. And so what do you think David was doing as a father and as a man after God's own heart? Do you think he was passing down this knowledge to Solomon? This was not new when Solomon woke up from that dream and he just had an epiphany about wickedness and about evil and about what God blesses and what he doesn't. This was partly due to the fact that he had a good father. He had a father that was a man after God's own heart. In the Psalms, it's penned this way, "Blessed is the man who stands not in the counsel of the wicked, blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the wicked, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of scoffers." He does not hang out with these people and they don't get on him. Their sin does not get on him. Why? He doesn't stand with them, he doesn't walk with them, and he don't sit with them. But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and on his law he meditates day and night. He is like a tree planted by streams of water that yields its fruit in season, and its leaf does not wither. In all that he does, he prospers. Boy, that sounds like Solomon later. The wicked are not so. They're like chaff that the wind drives away. Therefore, the wicked will not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous. For the Lord knows the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked will perish. Evil living is a life of loss. Wickedness and evil will take from you everything, even though the world may be handing you all the best that it has to offer. Money, power, intimacy, passion, all of these things, it passes out. But the bottom is so big that it just passes right through and leaves people evil and wicked. It is a life of loss. So you get the idea of a dad's blessing. And then back to Proverbs for one more time as they come this morning to sing. You get a dad's warning. Like a muddied spring or a polluted fountain is a righteous man who gives way before the wicked. Like a muddied spring. You're dying of thirst. Think about the imagery here. Middle East, Israel, you're dying of thirst in places. It is hot, it is desert, the sun is beating down, and you are a wreck, and you come up on a spring. And there is joy and elation and life. But you go down to get a drink and you find out it's poisonous. Man, it looked good. There is a double layer, a double flip to this. I found something that I didn't have, but that something is corrupted. Can you imagine the heartbreak? Can you imagine what you would rotate into next thinking you were going to die? Is there going to be another one? Are we going to find another one? We're days away from where we need to be, hours away from where we need to be. Like a muddied spring or a polluted fountain is a righteous man who gives way before the wicked. Friends, I don't know what or who is pressing against you right now. Jesus told you to be light and life. We cannot be polluted fountains. Wicked people are going to push against you to do evil things, to compromise, to side in with them, to go about devising their plans, not to get in the way when they fulfill them. That is going to be the rest of your life, and it will be the rest of mine. But you and I are called to be righteous. You're called to be set aside, set apart, to look like Christ. And in those moments, we're going to be pushing back against those things. It's going to put us at odds. We just have to make our peace. put the Lord at odds with people too. He said, blessed are you when other people mock you and harm your name and try to destroy your credibility and your integrity and your character. Blessed are you, right? They hated me first is what Jesus said. The world hates you. It hated me first. We need to rest in those promises. Number one, he's going to draw some of those evil people into the kingdom because of your witness. Because you did not yield in the moment. You did not side in with them. You were pushing against that evil. The other thing that it's going to do too is it's going to strengthen you and I. Because the days ahead may be harder. We don't know. We don't know what's coming our way. But if you and I will not take a little bit of, man, you're an idiot, or you're a fuddy-dud, or you're this, or you're that, a persecution, if we won't take that right now, we definitely won't take what's coming next. Stand with me this morning. If you need something, you come.